A new series. We're going to be doing a life trek with God. I hope that's not a new thing in your life, but we're going to talk about our life trek with God in terms of this fellow Abraham. So living on Abraham's promise, and we're going to spend a while there. And so, since Abraham comes to us in the text of Genesis so early on, I thought I would just spend a few minutes and go back to the beginning and bring us up to where Abraham is. And where the beginning is the creation, and how the beginning happens is that it is an event of blessings. God creates all the life that is on this planet, and he blesses it. And the main idea behind the blessing is that all life on this planet is able to reproduce, able to create those in their own image, just like God has. And so he blessed the creation. God made the man, Adam. Adam means man. And he created the woman, Eve. And there was only one law for them. The law was, do not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And of course, being humans, we look back in retrospect and we say, well, naturally enough, if there's only one law, that's the only one we would break. And they did. They were convinced by the evil one that they could be more like God by eating from this tree. And so they tried to be like God. And so God exiled them from the garden called Eden. And it says they were exiled to the east of Eden. And apparently they were just living outside the gates of Eden in the presence of the Lord. So they were still with God and he was with them. But they were outside, and they were having to do the very difficult task of bringing a living up from the earth. They weren't convinced that they were wrong about this being like God thing. So in chapter 4, Eve says, I will be like God. I'll show you that I can be like God. I will make a man, just like God made a man. And so she had a son named Cain. His name means to acquire or to get. And he knew how to get things. She had another son named Abel. And so Cain slew his brother. He killed his brother Abel because God recognized the younger son over the older son. And he was angry about it. And then the rest of that chapter goes on with, after that death, God exiled him even further. So his parents had been exiled from the garden. They came east outside the gates of the garden. And then Cain is exiled farther east to the land of Nod, the land of wandering, it means. And he created a city. And his descendants developed technologies, how to make music, how to keep and herd animals, how to get and forge metals and make weapons, all manner of things. But they were living east, far east, away from the presence of God. That's why Cain was so afraid, because he was leaving the presence of the Lord. So you had his descendants in this place far east of where his parents and the garden was, and they were high-tech barbarians. That's what they were. We can do this. We can make our own stuff. And so at the end of chapter 4, God comes to Adam and Eve again, and they have learned something in the process of losing these two sons. We lost one to death and one to exile. Perhaps God will let us start again. And so God gave them another son, and they named him Seth, which means to set. And God set into their lives this son. And so we read in chapter 5 that there were 10 generations from Adam to the next big guy in the Bible story. Anybody know who that guy is? Noah, yes. You should know this story. Adam, 10 generations later, Noah. Noah is a Hebrew word that means comfort, Noah. And it was said of him, perhaps this one will give us comfort from the curse. That is, all this work we're having to do to scrape a living out of the earth around us. And so, it says that God, in that time, in the 10th generation, with all the earth covered with these high-tech barbarians, and we should know about that, people who have no souls, but they're very smart, and they know how to create all manner of good things, but they don't always do good things with the things they invent. We understand that very well. And it says that God was heartbroken at what his creation had done, what mankind had done. He was heartbroken about the violence that was on the earth. These were great, powerful men who lived hundreds of years, and they took whomever's daughters they wished as their own, and they killed one another. And God said, I'm going to start over again. I'm going to bring a flood over the land. Haaretz, that's a Hebrew word that's worth knowing. Aretz means land. Haaretz is the land. This is a big part of this passage. And so he says, Noah, you're the only righteous man on the earth. You, your wife, your sons, and their wives will get on this ark that you're going to build with one of all the critters that are on the earth, on Haaretz. And that ark will be your salvation in the midst of my judgment on the earth. And so God did that. He brought this judgment. And then after the waters receded from the earth, God gave Noah a new law. He gave him what we call it Noah's Law. And the main point of this law had to do with the experience of Cain and Abel and all the violence after that. The point of the law, the main point of this law was the equality of humankind. And the foundation stone of human equality, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. Well, the foundation stone of that is this, that if you take another human life, there's no money you can pay, there's no sacrifice you can make. What is owed is your own life. And that's what makes everyone equal. Whether you're great or whether you're small, whether you're big enough to kill someone else smaller than you and weaker than you, it doesn't matter. Your life equals the same and their life is due. So that was really the given, you know, the basis of Noah's law. And you can read about that in Genesis chapter 9. But what became very obvious was, and what God said, I'm not going to do this again. I'm not going to flood the earth anymore because you humans are just like that. You have a yetzer ra, it's called in Hebrew. It means an evil inclination. It's our first kind of shot of the idea of human nature or sin nature. It'll get developed a lot more in the Bible as time goes on. But he says, I won't kill all of you anymore in judgment in this way. I will let this thing play out. And what we see in the text very quickly is that after the flood, everything pretty much went back to the same very quickly. In fact, Noah is... he's the new Adam. He, you know, all the language from the creation chapter 1 is in the description of Noah setting up the earth again. And so there was this vineyard. He planted the vineyard, just like in Eden. He would live off the fruit of this vine, of these vines. And he took these grapes and he made for himself wine. And he just got rip-roaring drunk. and the whole project fell right back off the rails. And the trouble was, they were right back in trouble. And so it says in chapter 11 that as humankind spread out over the earth again, that they went which way? East. They went east again. They went the same direction, and they came to a place called the Plain of Shinar. And they built a tower, and they built a city, and they said, we're going to build a tower that's going to be clear up to God, and we will be like God. There's something in us that can't just accept and enjoy being made in the image of God. We have to be God. That's us. And so God came and confused their languages and scattered them. And we get 10 more generations listed out in chapter 11 of Genesis. So we went from Adam, 10 generations to Noah, and then 10 more generations we get to Abram. He's the guy. And in a very real sense, he is the new Adam. He is the guy who God chooses to start over. And so he says to Abram, I want you to go back. You live in Babylon or that area, the area on the way to Babylon. See, if you look, you see, everybody's going east, but where are they going east from? So if you get all the way to the Babylon, to this city that they made, Babylon really was the city. This was as far away as you could get from God. This was the city where humankind conspired to be like God. This is the central place of high-tech barbarianism, if you will. And so if you look back to the west, you look on your map in your Bible, you'll see that due east or due west of Babylon, you come to a city called Jerusalem. And that city's going to come up in the story of Abraham, but it's not developed yet in the biblical text. But God puts his finger on one guy who lives in this place, in the east, this place of man-centered worship. And he says to him, I want you to go back to the beginning. I want you to go where everyone came east from, back to where the water came up from the ground and flowed out over the whole earth, where Eden was before the flood. I want you to go back. And now with you, Abram, this blessing, the same blessing from creation, this blessing is going to flow out over all the earth when you go back to Haaretz, the land. So let's take a minute and just look through the text again, if we might. Turn to Genesis chapter 12 again, if you would, let's take just a minute with that. Genesis chapter 12. Now, the way I envision this, the first 11 chapters are sort of these epic things are happening with all of mankind. It reminds me of the old movies, the silent movies, before they had talkies, you know. It was all in black and white, and you'd see, you know, the camels galloping across the desert, and you'd hear the little piano in the background. And everybody's going really fast because they didn't have very many frames per second then. And all of a sudden, it slows down and it breaks into color. That's what happens here with Abram. This is the first guy we're getting to meet that we get to a real human being that we can meet. I'm not saying those other guys didn't exist. I'm saying they absolutely did. But this is the first place in the text where we come to a story and we see inner dialogue, we see thought processes, we see relationship with God that we can identify with. We can understand the things that Abram is worried about. So let's look at the text. Now the Lord, that is Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, that is the tetragrammaton, the Yahweh, the proper title for the Lord. The Lord said to Abram, he's only speaking. So this guy who has no Bible, he just lives out there. He hears a voice. But it's the voice of the Lord, and for whatever reason, he recognizes it, he knows it, and the voice says to him, go. This is very emphatic in the Hebrew. There's two ways to be emphatic in Hebrew. You either say a word in its plural form, or you repeat it. So this is repeated. The Hebrew word for go is lech. And he says, lech lecha. He says it twice. In other words, get up and get on down the road. This is like, I'm not kidding, for sure, go. Someone has translated this as go you by yourself, go on the way that belongs to you alone, Abram. We're in relationship now. And so, if you go back a little bit into the end of chapter 11, it sort of chronologically tells you what happened after the call a little bit, because they got to a place, who it was Terah, who is Abram's dad, and then Abram and his two brothers, Haran and Nahor. And so they all left Ur of the Chaldees, and they came to this place that they called Haran, because they named it after Abraham's brother, because he died actually before they left. And so Lot, Haran's son, was now sort of adopted by Abraham. Abraham was his uncle, and he took care of him. Abram was 75. Terah, his dad, was 145. And it says that Abram was called to leave Haran. He had to leave his father and his brother behind. Apparently, they didn't want to go anymore. And so Abram had to choose between his father and brother and this God who was speaking to him. Because Terah lived 60 more years, it says. He lived to the age of 205. So he says, get up and go. And where will you go from? You will go from Haaretz, your land. You will go from your relatives or your birthplace, and from your father's house. Now, that was a world that didn't have television or anything. There was no telephone. There was no telegraph. If you wanted to know what was going on, you just went to the nearest hill and got up as high as you could and stood on your tiptoes to see as far as you could to the horizon. And if there's no smoke out there from or dust from horses coming, you're probably okay. Or you went down when you saw a stream of caravan riders coming, traders coming, and you would go and talk to them, and you'd say, so what's the news? And if they told you the truth or anything like it, then you knew something. And if the caravans didn't come for weeks, you didn't know. So you stayed where you were, because it was a dangerous world out there. There were a lot of bad people out there, a lot of high-tech barbarians out there. And they were just looking for their next victim to come along, a stranger like you. And that's the world. And so God says to Abraham, everything that is comfortable and safe in your life, I want you to leave it. That's scary. That is big scary. Now, at the end of this story, I'll page ahead and give you a little clue. But God is going to ask Abram, after he's walked with him for a long time, he's going to ask him to do something just as scary or even more scary down at chapter 22 with his son Isaac, who isn't even born yet. He's going to repeat this triplet. He's saying now, from your land, your birthplace, and your father's house, and then he's going to say, I want you to give up your son, your only son, the son whom you love. And that's going to be a hard place for Abram to be. But now, he just asks him this. He says, I want you to go from that place of comfort, that place of safety, and I want you to go to the land that I will show you. But God, couldn't you just give me an address, and I'll put it in my GPS, and then I'll know which way I'm going and where I'm going to? And he says, you just start walking, and I'll let you know when you get there.